This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 197. This week, I talked to Ben Keeps, cloud analyst, about the state of the nation in the cloud. Recorded live, May 24th, 2017. Give CodeShip Pro a try. More teams than ever are using Docker and Linux for their .NET applications. CodeShip Pro is a fully customizable, continuous integration and delivery service in the cloud with the best support for any team that is using .NET and Docker together and can run builds on Linux environments. CodeShip Pro comes with ready-to-use integrations for Azure, including Azure Container Services, and more. It also offers a free, convenient local CLI tool that allows you to run your builds locally and is the only hosted CI/CD that lets you build your own environment, giving you the most control and flexibility no matter what tool or stack you're trying to use. Check out CodeShip Pro's free plan that grants 100 builds per month, unlimited projects, and unlimited users. Open source projects are always free on CodeShip. Visit CodeShip.com today or check out CodeShip.com/features/pro to learn more. Good morning, everyone. It's Chris here. AC is off busy speaking at a conference this week, so I am flying solo with Dad's keys to the car. This week, I sat down with Ben Keeps. I actually recorded the show a couple of weeks ago at the Build Conference, Microsoft's Build Conference, up here in Seattle. Ben is a fellow Kiwi and cloud analyst and author. He writes a lot on the internet about the state of the cloud, different things that various SaaS companies and cloud providers are doing in the cloud. And so I thought I'd take the opportunity to sit down with him while he was up here in Seattle for a week or so to talk to him about the state of the cloud and what's going on with the various major players and also some of the not so major players as well. We don't get a lot of time to spend talking about some of the others that are doing things in the cloud outside of the big three, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon. Whereas Ben focuses a lot of his time consulting and talking with customers about cloud strategy and what's going on and so forth and what their best choices will be or some of the options they have. So we thought we'd do something a little different on the show this time. It's not a deep technical session. It's more at a sort of cloud strategy level, but I hope you find it as interesting as I did. Ben has a deep understanding and knowledge of everything that's going on in the cloud as it relates to who's doing what and who's got various strengths and weaknesses and so forth. So we spent a little bit of time on that, and I hope you find it as interesting as I did. So without further ado, Ben Keeps. While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler is a leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more. All right, so I'm here with Ben Keeps, a business leader, technology evangelist, an entrepreneur and commentator. Ben covers a convergence of business and technology. His areas of interest extend to leadership development, startup activity, digital transformation, and enterprise software, as well as articulating technology simply for everyday users.
Mainly, I apologize for all the buzzwords in that bio. That's all my fault.
The bit that I missed was also fellow Kiwi, so welcome to the Cloud Show.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to be here in Seattle. Like I travel a heap. I'm on the road a ridiculous amount, and it's always pretty cool when I get to bump into Kiwis at shows. It's
in awesome. Random places around the world.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Thanks for taking the time for joining us today. First, why don't we start off with just a little bit of an introduction outside of your bio. Like, what do you actually do and what's your job, I guess?
Yeah, I'm kind of lucky I don't have a real job, so I get to kind of dabble and play with a bunch of different stuff. So I've got a really varied background. I dropped out of school and I became an electrician. I did an apprenticeship and then sort of got bored with that. And then I got involved in started a business that makes backpacks and outdoor clothing. Have been for 25 years, been going. And then about 10 years ago, sort of started talking about kind of software as a service. It was when Salesforce was starting and this cool company from New Zealand, Xero, doing accounting software.
Yeah.
And kind of my timing was pretty good. That was the start of the cloud and it all kind of rolled from there. And, you know, for whatever reason, I've been lucky to kind of build this sort of brand as kind of a bit of a cloud expert, I guess, and yeah, been riding that wave.
That's certainly where we didn't meet while we were in New Zealand, and I've only really known you from your writing online. So you're an analyst, but you also do quite a lot of writing about the sort of the cloud landscape, for want of a better word. So is that sort of dual responsibilities and profession, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And so, like, in the old days, like, there's this distinct line between analysts, like the gardeners and the foresters and all those guys, and the journalists. And the analysts, like, wore suits, and they
still wear suits.
They ate really nice meals, and the journalists were kind of a little bit dishevelled, and basically analysts had opinions, the journalists just kind of wrote stuff. Those lines are being blurred, and so I'm kind of, you know, some vendors call me an analyst, some vendors call me a journalist. I'm kind of not either. I'm just sort of somewhere in the middle. I just do what I do, really.
It's probably the more up-to-date version of how people get their information and consume information and things like that, right?
Yeah, and it's really interesting. You know, like, I get so many emails from CIOs, CTOs, you know, large organizations that have kind of been Googling their ERP requirements and have kind of found my stuff and, you know, asked for a bit of advice. And that stuff's really fun. It's really fun talking to real users.
So do people call you for sort of traditional analyst reasons? Like, do you go in and do briefings about particular topics? Or is it more like, you know, customers have particular projects in mind and they need some strategy advice from time to time and you go in and sort of help them along those lines?
Yeah, there's kind of two sort of distinct classes. Like, the first is we need to change our ERP. You know, we need some advice about what's the best ERP for us. Kind of more interesting, and, you know, the stuff I prefer is kind of, hey, we know something's happening. We've got our Uber moment that's coming, you know, which is a cliche, but it's true. And, you know, we need to start thinking about what digital transformation looks like. You know, so in a past life, I was involved as kind of a doing design strategy, sort of design with a capital D, kind of the sort of stuff that, you know, organizations like IDEO do. Going into businesses and just helping them sort of ideate, think about what their future looks like. And part of that's technology, products, services, people, you know, all those sorts of things. And so it's a lot of that stuff, really.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, you certainly write a lot about sort of the cloud landscape and what's going on with different cloud vendors, public and private, and all the bits in between out there on the internet. And so I guess that's where I read most of your work, was around, you know, news coming out of conferences like Build or VMware's equivalent and all those kinds of things. So we're at a Microsoft conference, obviously. Is this something new for you? Are you covering Microsoft more and more these days? Or is that, you know, something you've been doing for a while?
So I have. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, there are three main public cloud vendors, AWS, Microsoft, or Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. And I cover all three of them and I attend all of their events. I would say that in the past couple of years, you know, Microsoft has really, you know, moved up in terms of its commitment and its focus and organizationally as well. Like, you know, just personally, you know, I'm a real Satya fanboy. You know, just we saw at the keynote this morning, kind of the passion and the authenticity that he brings to what he does. And that is really reflected in the organization, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's been obviously a huge change at Microsoft over the last, what is it now, 2 years, I guess?
Yeah, maybe a little bit more.
Two and a bit, yeah. With Satya at the helm. And, you know, having worked at Microsoft for many years, people said, you know, is it really him or was this always there? And I think it boils back to that authenticity of the leadership and letting his people flourish, honestly. So it's been very refreshing. And they've obviously been making leaps and bounds in the cloud as well. So it's obviously working a little.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, like on a couple of levels, like how one person at the helm of a huge, huge organization can make change and set the tone. But alongside that, you know, obviously takes time to engineer and to build products. So clearly there was stuff happening before Satya came, but he kind of took the shackles off and let be executed upon. And we're seeing that now with the product announcements and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did you think of day one? I mean, we're sitting in a podcasting booth on the expo floor at Build. We've had day one keynote. We haven't had day two keynote yet, so there may be more still to come. But how did you feel about the keynote this morning? Big focus on AI, obviously. Plenty of momentum around Office 365 and Azure, and those were really the key topics, I think.
From a kind of positioning and a branding perspective, I never kind of got Satya's cloud first, mobile first thing, and it's really interesting to see that he's moved away from that. It's now about intelligent cloud, and I know those are just words, but at the end of the day, what is going to drive the future? What is it that drives Uber? What is it that drives the big disruptors? And it's about leveraging the cloud, getting their agility up, getting their costs down, getting their time to market as good as possible, and doing it in a smart way. You know, how can you amass all that data, take all those insights, look at what's happening in the outside world, and derive, you know, information from it and make your products and services better? And so we saw a bunch of stuff around that. Obviously, you know, machine learning is huge. You know, it was funny. I was at an analyst day yesterday where we got the kind of the lowdown on everything that's being announced at the show. And one of the things they demoed was the Microsoft Translator, which is obviously out there and people can download. And I went out for dinner with a bunch of people who were here last night, and I was sort of talking about it and they hadn't seen it. So three of us kind of downloaded it, and there was somebody talking in Chinese, somebody talking in Spanish, and, you know, me in English. And that's all the cloud and machine learning driving and empowering this incredible, you know, execution. It's amazing, really.
Yeah, I think that for me, this stuff has never been more accessible to the average customer or the average developer ever before. You know, this technology has been around for a little while, but it's been really expensive, really tough to use, and kind of out of the reach of most people. And I think it really became clear to me today that, you know, this is stuff that is mainstream or becoming mainstream very, very quickly, and much more accessible to the average Joe, so to speak.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, I mean, I guess I'm a little bit of a hippie, but I generally don't like sort of big, bad corporations. What I like is people doing good work on their own and kind of democratization. And it's awesome to think that some developer sitting, and doesn't necessarily need to be in Silicon Valley anymore, some developer sitting in Wellington, New Zealand, can leverage these tools and can build some amazing stuff. And that's awesome. That's exciting.
Yeah, no, very much so. So we saw a bunch about AI, a bunch of momentum about Office 365. Are those also sort of areas of technology that you focus on around productivity as well as sort of the compute and Divi kind of side of things?
Yeah, so I kind of right through the stack. I mean, you know, like I cover sort of end user applications, so CRM and ERP and, you know, office productivity and those sorts of things, right down to the infrastructure that runs it. So it was really interesting today. You know, you're right, we saw some Office 365 stuff, which is exciting, like real-time translation of PowerPoint presentations, which was super cool. But then we also saw things like the announcement that Azure Stack is ready to be GA'd middle of this year. And that's really exciting because, you know, it's funny, you know, we go back 8 years and there were a bunch of us kind of talking about the cloud, and there was this sort of arrogance that if you're not all in the public cloud, you know, you're not legitimate somehow. But the reality is, you know, the example we had this morning was a cruise ship out on the high seas that needs to do some computational stuff. They can't connect to the cloud. And so having that kind of idea of a hybrid cloud is really interesting. And I think, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it later on, but it is a key differentiator for Microsoft, I believe.
Yeah, I think it is definitely refreshing to see Microsoft's attitude change a little bit about the cloud, like you said, over the last few years, where a few years ago it was, like you said, you have to be all in, right? And you're not cool if you're not doing the cloud and all of that sort of stuff. And customers really, I felt, really rebelled against that message somewhat because that's just not the reality they live in yet, right? And it is refreshing to see Microsoft button back off that a little bit and say, hey, we're the best cloud out there, but to help you get there, we're going to do these things, and we know you're going to live on-prem for a little while yet.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like if you're a greenfields opportunity, so thinking about Xero, for example, you know, online accounting, born in the cloud, no legacy, you know, when it started 10 years ago, clearly you go all in the cloud. Why wouldn't you? But if you're a, you know, an organization like a Boeing here in Seattle or a big bank that has a lot of legacy stuff, you're not going to just rip that out and magically unicorns and rainbows have it appear in the cloud. And the other thing is obviously, you know, if you're in a regulated industry, whether it's health or financial, you've got to think about some stuff that has to still be on premises.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough. It's nice to see him being realistic about that.
Yeah, for sure.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. If you're interested in all things happening at Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, Power BI, SharePoint, or .NET, look them up on Valid.nl.
So you spent a bunch of time looking at different cloud vendors. We mentioned AWS, Google. There are some others out there as well, sort of not quite as, I guess, what's the right word, publicly visible, for want of a better word, or cool. They're not in TechCrunch as often. They're not on, you know, the front page of Tech Meme and things like that. Who are some of the other players out there that you come across in different engagements with your customers that are kind of making interesting movements in the space?
So obviously, you know, the big three, as you said, the big three public clouds are AWS, Azure, and GCP, Google Cloud Platform. But there's also people doing other stuff. So IBM has a cloud platform. You know, arguably it's a little bit hampered that they are essentially a hardware company and they're finding it hard to kind of move to software. Oracle, you know, also has some cloud offerings. Again, difficulty there is that traditional revenue stream is kind of like cocaine. It's really hard to go off that. And
they've mastered that too.
Yeah, they totally have. And they've mastered the lock-in, which is another issue. But there's also things like just a couple of days ago, I was in Boston at the OpenStack Summit. And so OpenStack, for people that don't know, is like an open source cloud operating system. And, you know, commercially, it hasn't got a lot of uptake in terms of, you know, commercial use. But a lot of organizations are using it for their own cloud. So a bunch of telecommunications vendors, you know, Telecom Germany, you know, for example, Deutsche Telekom has its own cloud offering that it's built on top of OpenStack. CERN, obviously, the Large Hadron Collider, which is an amazing project, their computing is built on top of OpenStack. So you're right, there are these kind of peripheral solutions, and it's not going to be the main three that take the entire prize because it's a big prize. So, you know, it's not a zero-sum game.
Yeah, gotcha. That is really interesting because we, on our show, we spend most of the time talking about Microsoft Cloud. We cover announcements in Google and AWS a little bit, but only to the degree that we have something interesting to say about them, at least I think. But it's always interesting to see what customers are really using and what they're thinking about. So it sounds like OpenStack, one of the key advantages of that is you can run it yourself wherever you like. We saw today Azure Stack announcement, like you mentioned, out by mid-year. I don't know if that's going to slip again, I guess. It's slipped for the last like 7 years.
Well, it's in its final final preview. So
yeah, it's getting close.
So I think it will turn up.
Yeah, I hope so. I certainly hope so. It sounds like that is a definite option for Microsoft customers that are in the Microsoft camp that want some flexibility about where they run their workloads and if they're not quite ready for the Azure cloud yet. How do you think that's going to stack up against AWS and Google, the two other biggies in the game, and what are those guys doing that could potentially also get them into this game?
It's a really interesting question. So Google, I would say, is completely in the public cloud, and just culturally, it would be hard for them to move to a kind of more hybrid model because it's just not in their DNA. Amazon's a little bit different. I would have said, you know, a year ago, if you'd asked me the question, I would have put them the same as Google. But 6 months ago, we had an announcement around a partnership between VMware and AWS, which is kind of interesting because VMware always publicly said that AWS is the devil incarnate. And their partnership was kind of around helping existing organizations kind of more closely sort of map to their hybrid requirements. I mean, it's not to the point where you can have a private instance of AWS running somewhere. It's more around kind of integration and commonality. So I would say that, you know, assuming Azure Stack, you know, launches in the next couple of months, and it's as we've been told it is, I would say that's a much higher level hybrid offering. But one thing that's interesting, I was talking to Scott Guthrie yesterday, and I said to him, you know, I asked him, you know, it's interesting because Azure Stack today, as it's going to release, kind of feels like compute and storage, essentially, in private instances. And that makes sense, and I get that. But there's also some really interesting stuff happening in terms of serverless and machine learning and all these other things. And so what is the kind of intention around those higher level services within a sort of a hybrid context? And obviously there's nothing to announce, but I get a sense that for the same reasons that Microsoft realizes there needs to be a hybrid compute and storage story, there needs to be a kind of a hybrid story for those other things. So I think over time we'll start to see more and more become appropriately delivered in a hybrid manner.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they draw that line of value in the cloud, where they ultimately want you long term, versus signing deals today to keep you on their stuff and able to do it on-prem. So we'll see what they see what they ship. There's a few products in that camp at Microsoft going through the exact same decisions. You know, SharePoint, for example, tons and tons of customers on premises. They have to keep supporting it, have to keep feeding and watering it with new versions and things to keep the EAs renewed and all that. But they're struggling with what to put in that box. Like, how much do you, feature-wise, what do you add to SharePoint for on-premises customers when you really want them in the cloud long-term?
Yeah, and it's really hard because you've got, it's not even a technical debt thing. It's kind of an installed customer base that you have to keep supporting. And it's kind of a culture around a product that is, it sounds like a funny thing to say, but it's an on-premises culture. Like it's a different, the application looks and feels and works in a different way from a greenfield cloud application perspective. And so how you navigate that path, and it's been really interesting watching the Office 365 development from 10 years ago when Steve, you know, talked about a kind of a software plus services model that really was kind of, you know, anti-cloud. And I think we've come a very long way with Office 365, but it still feels slightly conflicted or slightly dissonant in terms of the cloud offerings versus the on-premises offerings. I think not so much, you know, I think the mobile offerings are, of Office 365, of the apps are really good. They're appropriate and contextual for mobile. But I think that the sort of offerings around, you know, the browser-based offerings are less so.
Yeah, gotcha. Office 365 ultimately is historically a collection of on-prem products, right? It's Office client applications, which run on-prem, Exchange and SharePoint and so forth. And absolutely, that's a real struggle for them, is bridging that transition to the cloud, where they ultimately want to be one day. But bringing their customers along for the ride has definitely been a tough transition for them.
And watching the Outlook journey has been interesting because, you know, obviously Microsoft acquired the company whose name...
Acompli.
And obviously a lot of that DNA wasn't just, you know, or the acquisition wasn't just about Outlook. It was about how can we think about mobile apps, browser-based apps, without being constrained by what the desktop paradigm is today.
Yeah, now the, you know, the founder of Acompli now runs the whole Outlook and Outlook division or group, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
To make sure we get great experiences everywhere. So I'm very glad to see that.
Yeah.
Javier is doing great stuff at Microsoft. We've talked a little bit about hybrid, a little bit about on-prem and the cloud. What about geographic differences and how customers are going around the globe? Where's hot, where's not? Are you seeing some countries doing a really good job at it? Others, due to maybe regulatory reasons, can't do it as well as others. Are there different geographic differences you're seeing? And I guess, where is the most change happening and where's the least amount of change happening?
Yeah, it's interesting.
View?
I mean, obviously, US adoption is off the charts. It's always at the front, so that goes without saying. I think there's a few things there. You know, Microsoft has 38 different regions for Azure, so it's covering the bases as well or better than any of the competitors. Clearly, Europe is a real concern. Europe has some massive concerns and has done for a few years around, with the Snowden whistleblowing, obviously, around surveillance and what the US authorities can get their eyes on. So that's a concern. And there's also not just some concerns around having a data center in region, but also, does the fact that it's a US company that's hosting it, does that mean there are some issues? That's interesting. I mean, obviously, there's some little geographies that economics just don't work, full data center, and so potentially, you know, Azure Stack can actually be part of an answer for that. You know, it'd be great to see some kind of footprint in New Zealand, for example. But what's really interesting is the developing world, because, you know, obviously the developing world didn't have fixed wired telephone. And so, you know, seeing how they've adopted mobile, for example, where people go straight from no means of communication straight to kind of a mobile-based. And that's a real opportunity for the cloud as well. And it's something that arguably the big three public cloud vendors probably aren't focused on right now. But for those kind of second-tier players, and those emerging markets are a pretty interesting opportunity, I think.
That's a really interesting analogy, because some of those emerging markets just completely, like you said, skipped fixed-line infrastructure and are arguably in the best position for cloud adoption from that perspective. They don't have a whole ton of on-prem legacy data centers themselves, perhaps, or other things like that to think about. And so can sort of leapfrog having to think about migration in that case.
Well, it's interesting as well. Like, you know, in Africa, there's a banking company called M-Pesa, which basically does peer-to-peer lending and banking for the unbanked, essentially. And its adoption rates are unbelievable, because now everyone has a phone, they can SMS money to each other. They don't have fixed banking. They don't, you know, they never had a kind of a history of retail banks. And so you've seen, you know, same kind of deal. It's an analogous that you've gone from people from a purely cash society to a completely mobile banking society, and without the intermediate step of banks.
Yeah, it blows my mind to think about the example in China where, I forget the name of the app, right? But basically you run your entire life through...
WePay.
WePay, is it? Yeah. And there's it just sort of strikes me, they're already in the future and eventually we'll catch up with different bots and apps to aggregate all this stuff, but it feels like they just completely leapt into that world and adopted faster than anybody else. So
yeah,
it boggles my mind considering I still have to sign a chit when I
pay
for something
sure.
with a credit card.
Yeah,
that's the US banking system for you.
What if you could take any process your teams use to get work done and make it happen automatically? What if you could save countless hours and help people work better together? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. and it flows in and out of the tools you use every day. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever.
Briefly this morning when we caught up for coffee, we talked, you made a comment about vendor lock-in that really intrigued me, which was, I think I said something along the lines of taking technology choices or stack choices and that being a leverage point that clouds have one another. And you said something about it wasn't necessarily the, I forget the exact wording you used, but it wasn't exactly the case, that it was much more free-flowing than that, but it was more the technology stack or the development stack on top that you kind of get locked into. Would you mind elaborating a little bit on what you were talking about there?
Every organization's number one driver is agility. Obviously, people look for the lowest price, but at the end of the day, you need to be able to deliver innovation because every CIO, the CEO, is demanding that they deliver innovation more rapidly. And so therefore, if you're a CIO saying, look, here's two platforms, one is a really proprietary platform, and I know if I go in there, you know, like I'm going to be, you know, it's going to be hard to get out, but it's going to deliver agility for the organization versus this other one that gives me all this freedom, but doesn't. You know what decision they're going to make. And so you go into that situation, you choose the platform that gives you the agility, and then all of a sudden you build up this kind of organizational muscle memory, this organizational DNA around that platform. And the technical cost to shift is one thing, but really the big thing, the big cost of shifting is the process, the systems, the human costs. And so don't get me wrong, you know, like I spend a lot of time with large organizations that are dying to get off Oracle and all the cloud vendors, you know, we saw some announcements here today around helping people move off Oracle databases. Clearly, there are some lock-in issues, but those are more around economics and human sort of cultural impact aspects rather than technology, in my mind.
Gotcha. It's intrigued me because with each of these different cloud vendors, you sort of make a pretty big bet on their technology of choice, right? So on the Microsoft side, they're obviously making moves around more open source bits and pieces, but you know, traditionally it's been building .NET apps and things like that. And it's always struck me as being a real enormous cost from an institutional perspective to retrain people and move them if you choose to change stacks. But it is really interesting that you make that balance between just getting it done and sucking that up and potentially later on, you know, having to deal with that. But that speed is obviously more important at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. So one of the things we saw in the keynote this morning was Scott Guthrie talking about Azure being a great place for SaaS applications and in particular startups to build things. How do you feel Azure's playing in that space? For obviously AWS is the king of the hill with startups, and it seems like Azure might be, I don't know, king of the hill in terms of enterprises, and they all want to be in each other's camp. Azure are obviously wanting to get into the SaaS space. AWS, maybe with this VMware stuff, are trying to get in more into the enterprise space. And do you feel that's legit?
That's a fair kind of summation of what's going on. I mean, I think that everyone wants to have a compelling proposition at both ends of the food chain and all points in between. So that's kind of interesting. And I think you're right. You know, at the end of the day, you know, if we were to go and pick 100 Silicon Valley SaaS ISVs, probably 85% of them are on AWS. And so I do think that Microsoft has done a pretty poor job of engaging with those SaaS apps, with those startups. I mean, obviously, it runs a startup support program, BizSpark, and as does every other cloud vendor. But I think there's a lot of value that Microsoft's leaving on the table there. And my personal kind of bugbear is that, so everyone does all these kind of startup programs, you know, get yourself $50,000 worth of free credit or whatever, and we'll help you kind of design your app. But then when you get to that next point, i.e. you've used your credits, you've got to a little bit of scale, there's no support from these vendors. And then you're like, well, actually, I'm going to choose the platform that X, Y, or Z kind of SaaS vendors on. And I think that the vendors need to think about really providing support at their next level. And it's both technology support, but also business support to help retain those customers and show them the value that they get from the particular cloud platform.
I have this great story. When I was working at Microsoft, I had an intern working for me for a little while, and he was straight out of university, or still at university, obviously. And I was showing him, this was years and years ago, and showing him through some of the really cool mapping technology that was in Bing Maps. And it was all about the bird's eye view and all the topographic stuff that they were doing and things at the time, which was really interesting. He sort of stopped and turned to me and said, in a very kind of naive but absolutely on point manner, he said, wow, you guys should really tell people about this, right? And it strikes me that Microsoft are talking about wanting to attract, you know, SaaS startups and things like that, but don't really get in their faces nearly enough to really win them over at the point where they have the ability to choose or care about their choice before they start, you know, raising money and building their platform and just going for it, right?
Yeah, and I think they're realizing that, and I think we've seen some things, this week around, you know, really helping or encouraging kind of those SaaS vendors to be on platform. I think it's early days and they've got a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah. What about some of the other players like Salesforce, for example, right? It's something I don't know a lot about. I went to Dreamforce a couple of times and took the Kool-Aid there. They seem to be wanting to play more as a platform more and more these days than an application. Are they starting to come up in these conversations as well as a place to build apps?
Yeah, so a couple of things. I mean, probably 3 or 4 years ago, Salesforce bought Heroku, which was at the time was kind of the dominant platform as a service. But as well as that, at the same time, they have Force.com. So Force.com is essentially, if you had to simplify it, you know, Heroku is where developers can, you know, it's a pass that developers can use to build kind of apps. Force.com is kind of a place where business people can build apps that are kind of related to their CRM data, for example. And Salesforce has got a massive ecosystem of people doing amazing stuff. And, you know, interestingly, last year or maybe the year before, Veeva, which is a health technology company, actually IPO'd, and it's built entirely on top of Force.com. So it's amazing to think that you've got a business app built on top of a business app platform, and that is big enough to IPO. And so Salesforce is doing a really good job of attracting those kind of SaaS vendors. And I think that there's some real lessons to be kind of taken for Microsoft.
Wasn't it Peter Thiel who said something along the lines of you shouldn't take a dependency on somebody who can crush your business?
So that's the really interesting thing. And we've seen it time and again. You know, every vendor you can name who has got scale and has got a platform or an ecosystem has done something that is horrendous to its to its ecosystem. You know, when Twitter bought Gunip, it turned off the fire hose to developers, for example. Just one little example. And so that's always going to happen. And there's that tension. I think it comes down to, it's slightly naive, but it comes down to communicating, being really upfront about what is roadmap, what is considered core, and helping ISVs, helping developers understand that there's no point of building something that will compete with core platform.
Yeah, and you have to build on the shoulders of something. So it's just where in the stack you choose to do that, I guess. That is interesting about Salesforce being the place where business apps go and get built. That seems like classic Microsoft territory with things like Power Apps and Flow and the work that historically was done in SharePoint and things like that. That'll be really interesting to watch how people approach those choices.
I was going to say the difference is that on Force.com you're building stuff with business data, but you're absolutely right. You know, the stuff that we're seeing around the sort of broader Office 365 kind of franchise is similar.
Excellent. So you write a bunch on the net. Where can people find your work if they want to learn more about what you do and what you write about?
Best place to find me is on Twitter. I'm just Ben Keeps on Twitter, BenKeeps. And so I'm pretty engaged on that. But I write, currently I write for Computer World and Network World. So a bunch of content there. And in the past, I've written for Forbes and TechCrunch and GigaOM and Rewrite Web. So a bunch of content all around the web.
All over the show.
Yeah.
Prolific.
Yeah, something like that.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for coming on the show and sitting down with us a little bit about talking about cloud strategy and where Microsoft plays and where some of the others are at. We really appreciate you taking the time and thanks for sitting down with us.
Awesome. It's been fun. Thank you.
Cheers.
Okay.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.